Siren Radio.
Oh, goodness, that's exciting. Highs of 4 degrees, highs of 14 degrees centigrade. Mild panic there as we actually went to the southern hemisphere. Lows of 4 degrees centigrade, and the day will be full of sunny intervals and some light breezes. So excellent times to actually get out and about, methinks.
Thunderbirds, James Bond, Stanley Kubrick, Meryl Streep, Joan 90, Doctor Who, Batman Begins, Superman, The Three Martinis, The Three Deuces, and Dick's Banner. Who needs anything more to welcome the legendary Shane and Sheila Rimmer to the Midweek Drive?
Quite right, too. Shane and Sheila Rimmer, welcome, folks. How are you?
Great.
Marvellous.
I'm still swooning over that introduction. It's all right.
Shane, as you always know, I like to sort of undersell the thing, so I, you know, never let the hype...
It's a fault of yours, but I mean, you'll get over it sometime or another.
It's a little tad, you know, a bit of hyperbole. We have three fine folk in the studio, all of whom have been heavily influenced by many of your incarnations on stage and screen over the last few years, Shane. So I'll introduce them to you, shall I? Dr. Christopher Dowse.
Hello, Shane.
Good morning to you.
I'm a little starstruck, sir. I am older, significantly older than the two younger people in the room. That doesn't include Alex.
Well, I'm older than anybody, so you're in good
time. And I have been hearing your voice for nearly all of my life, and I am an enormous, enormous fan, and I thank you for all your fantastic work over the years.
Well, I had just as much fun as anybody else. I was very fortunate to arrive in England when things were booming. I mean, things were being written that were spectacular work, and there was so much of it. So
I think he wants to say thank you.
I wanted to say thank you, yeah. Why do I find that so difficult?
It's because you're so modest. I've heard about you.
Genius stuff. That's great stuff. And, of course, we discovered early in the first part of the programme that you weren't wearing three Bond movies.
Absolutely.
Not just two.
Yeah,
three.
That's right. Yeah, we were going through the Bonds, weren't we? It's a shame.
Well, they introduced you very, very cagily, very, very, very slowly. I mean, the first one was I just wandered in and there were the... No, there was just one of them. It was just Connery on that one. Hmm. I was lucky, though, to play part with both of them, with both Roger and Connery, and it was incredible the way I mean, it was Connery's baby, the series.
It's another thank you, I think.
No, it's not another thank you. I've done my one for the day, and Roger had to find a different way. Nobody's going to contest. And nobody's going to compete with Connery, on his terms. So Roger was very, very canny. He came in with raised eyebrows and a very sort of disarming kind of attitude. So he made it work, and they were very happy with him at the headquarters. So the series continued. Otherwise, I don't know what they would have done at that particular point. Later on, they were okay with the present Bond. But I think there was a bit of a dip at that time, or there could have been, if Roger hadn't been about.
I still thought Live and Let Die as an underrated movie, and Man with the Golden Gun, of course, yours, Spy Who Loved Me, Shane, and that was one of the most popular ones, directed by Lewis Gilbert, of course, amongst others, who did, I think he directed in You Only Live Twice. It was Guy Hamilton who did Diamonds Are Forever. So.
Yeah.
All wonderful stuff. Let's move on to another fine soul. It's Jess Williams. Jess, your father used a typical, wonderful northern wit and wisdom in bringing you up because he forced you to watch Thunderbirds.
He did indeed, yeah. I didn't really have much of a say in it, so you were part of my childhood because you had to be, so thanks for that.
You see, there are parents who are, even at this moment, Shane, forcing your material, which is only good, I think. It'll make Britain great again.
Absolutely.
Personally.
Definitely.
And any thoughts you'd like to share with Shane at this stage? Because obviously he's done a lot more than just Thunderbirds.
Yeah. Obviously, I mainly know you for Thunderbirds because I did used to actually like it when I was little. I need to, like, reiterate
like
that as well. did used to actually like watching it. I wasn't just made to watch it. But
otherwise, it would have been child abuse. You know, to be quite clear in this particular area. So carry on.
But
no, thank you at the moment.
No.
I never actually realised that you were in James Bond. But that's another thing that my dad absolutely loves. He's quite into films and like stuff like that. Mm. So I was never that big a fan of James Bond, but it's quite exciting to know that you were in such big films and stuff.
Exalted company.
Gandhi, with Richard Attenborough. Without Shane's opening line as Edward R. Morrow and the opening of Gandhi, the whole movie would have collapsed. I mean, this is what Richard Attenborough used to say regularly.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yep. And quite apart from a whole heap of other, a range of fantastic stuff there. Stanley Kubrick, Dr. Strangelove, How I Learned to Love the Bomb, Love the Submarine, all of these wonderful things, hence the trickle and the jingle. And Christian R. Karbowitz.
Hello, pleasure to meet you, Shane.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. I grew up watching Thunderbirds as well, but I didn't realise until when I was actually reading up on you that you were with Stanley Kubrick on Doctor Strangelove, which a film that I was shown when I was quite young as well, and just sort of watched it in later years and stuff. But I was shocked when I read that, because I did end up starting to really like that film as well as the years went on. But what was Stanley like? Because I heard he was a very
insane,
yeah, for lack of a better term.
Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't get that question.
Did you meet Stanley Kubrick, and so what was he like?
Kubrick was sort of a father confessor on the thing. He had an immensely active bunch to do the film with. First of all, it was Peter Sellers. With that great talent he had, you were never really sure which way he was going to go. And when he had a difference, an altercation with Kubrick, what they did was they cut off the nose of the plane so the camera crew would have access to the flight deck. It's the only way they could do it. Apparently, Sellers forgot all about that thing being cut off and rushed to have it out with what's his name?
Kubrick.
With Kubrick, and just kept on going. He just hit midair, and there he was flying through the air, landing almost at Kubrick's feet. So that's why he appeared for the rest of the picture in a wheelchair. He broke a leg,
oh, really?
I think, in a couple of places. So. It was a bad ending to an argument, and he never should have really started, I guess. I mean, I think Kubrick, of all men, was the sanest and the fairest that I could ever remember.
So there we are. Moral of the story is, if you're going to have an argument, do not break your leg afterwards. No. It's just comedy.
No, don't break your leg then.
It's not good at all. Sheila, I see that in terms of The Rimmers on the Road, which is a new series I'm working to develop, actually, because I think it's going to happen, we will be heading off to Memorabilia at the beginning of June. And also I see, have we got the NEC? Is that the Birmingham NEC that you've also got there? Or?
That is the memorabilia
thing.
The
NEC Birmingham will be Memorabilia. Quite right. There isn't a place called Memorabilia. I would have remembered if it was. Sorry. And also you're in Norwich for the weekend, for a new weekend at the end of September. So that's all great. But when it comes to conventions, well, Chris Dowes is getting to be quite an aficionado at conventions as well, because clearly you, as a writer, Chris, developing Warhammer and so on. By the way, you need to get a role for Shane on a Warhammer routine.
Well, they're always looking for audio. Yeah. The big difference between me going to a convention and doing a signing and Shane turning up is that there'll be a queue for Shane and there's about two people for me.
Not always.
Well, I'd queue up Shane, absolutely.
Sometimes I have to run up and down the main gut and waving a flag, saying with the direction of how to get to our table. Anyway, go ahead.
No. I was just going to say, I was at just doing a book. I do audio dramas more than books now. I had somebody actually turn up from from Portugal, which was very nice to get my signature.
Oh, yeah.
But I was just going to ask you, what's the if you can say, what's the strangest thing anyone's asked you to sign?
The strangest?
Yeah, if it's, or cleanest, I don't know.
I got you got me on my left foot.
I mean, do people bring their own things with them, own memorabilia to sign?
I always feel that actually Sheila provides a very capable selection of photographs, which are all top quality stuff.
You know, sometimes people keep clippings and things, and they turn up and say, oh, would you sign this, please? And you've never seen it, or you haven't seen it for years. I just wondered if you'd ever had that experience before.
Oh, yeah, well, some of them come dressed as crew members. They've got all the flight gear on. So it gets a bit confusing after a while. You never know who is who and who is what. But they
do all bring their own things there. Some,
oh, yeah.
And some wonderful original books and magazines and things like that. You know, it's quite fascinating.
Because there was loads of fantastic stuff printed in the 60s and 70s, Century 21 and all that kind of stuff. It was just wonderful, because that's what I grew up on, that. Just the articles and the illustrations.
21st
and the
century
photos.
Today.
Absolutely.
Agent 21, exactly. Secret Agent, 0X.
Fantastic.
It was an amazing operation, that whole thing with Jerry and Tarek Meddings and that. One thing about Jerry was he demanded, well, no, he didn't demand you face-to-face, but he made sure he had the best people in the right places. And that's why things, I think, turned out so well. A lot of them were young. A lot of them had just come out of, I call it high school. I don't know what you call it over here. But he was a perfectionist himself, and he wanted other people. He passed it on. So Derek Meddings, you couldn't have asked for a better special effects person than him. They got a marvelous tuition.
May I say something?
I'm out of here.
Alex. Master Alex, can I say something?
Of course you can, Sheila. Yeah. This is why you're billed as the Rimmers. You know, it's a critical aspect of the whole thing. Shane and
Thank
Sheila.
You. Well, I just want to just say a word about last weekend, or 2 weekends ago. We went to a Doctor Who Appreciation Society in Crawley, by Gatwick, in a big hotel there. And they had loads and loads and loads of Doctor Who people who all stayed in the hotel for the weekend, you know. So apart from that, which was interesting and nice, there was a chap there who owns a company called Real Time Pictures, R-E-E-L, Time Pictures. And he wanted to do a video with Shane for an hour. And his partner used to work at the BBC, so he interviewed Shane. And the other guy did the camera work. And apparently they do these for cult people or people who've been in cult films. Mm. They do it a lot. And they were very thrilled with the final...
I'm not surprised. And for the benefit of the listener who might not appreciate, we're not talking about a cult as in the Moonies here or some sort of strange sort of aspect here. It's as in cult television, as in it's as awesome. Like The Amazing World of Gumball. You know, there's a TV series which actually benefited from Shane immeasurably. And can you say anything about Firestorm, or with it being in post-production with, of course, Jamie Anderson, the son of Jerry as well, is there anything you can say about Firestorm? It's a case of, we can't say anything yet.
Yeah, well, Daz sent us an email saying that they were going to Cannes and they were top of the list to be viewed there.
Excellent.
So I don't know what happened with that.
Well, hopefully he's not wearing high heels on the carpet, or, you know, because I know obviously there are people, Kristen Stewart had to take her high heels off. And I don't think he's been confused for Lars von Trier and has had half the audience walk out of the picture. So,
well, that's good. I'm glad about that. I hate his pictures.
Do you know, I mean, Sheila, this, I'm a bit like Jess. You know, we know we can always rely upon your good self for an opinion. That's the important thing. And that's one of the reasons why we don't invite Lars on the show, you know, despite the curse to the Kristen connection, etc. It's a whole world of things there. Any further questions you'd like to put to the Rimmers, Jess?
There's too many questions. I'm just trying to think.
What would your father? What would you channel your father?
I'm
what
trying
would,
to channel
what
my
would
dad.
He say exactly?
I'm trying. What was it actually like working on Doctor Who? Because I feel like that would be quite an experience to kind of
In the Western, in the gunfight at the OK Corral, which actually had a singing introduction as well, and also pop quiz fact, David Graham was there as well. You have Brains and Scott Tracy in the same episode of Doctor Who. I mean, this is whoa, you know, that
small world.
Exactly.
Yeah. My part was Seth Harper. It's a great sort of a Western kind of name. David was a bartender in it, and he was supposed to, when the gang came in and they were going to shoot up everybody, he was supposed to have gone into a swoon behind the bar. He does that very well. And so he was on the ground. He was lying on the floor while this incredible shootout went on. I don't know if anybody fell on him, but he was in it, which was lovely.
It's amazing. I was just actually sort of tempted to say Dick Spanner, of course. We mustn't forget Dick Spanner, purely and simply because Hannah was very moved by Dick Spanner. Lots of other things there, and just more and more things. Of course, you might well have screened in your day at Grimsby, Chris, The Joys of the People That Time Forgot.
Oh, dear me. That's a hairy old film, that one, isn't it?
Well, hairy he might well have been, but Shane was Hogan. Hairy Hogan.
There we go.
Mr. Hogan.
The follow-up to The Land That Time Forgot, I believe, wasn't it?
Exactly. It's all
Doug McClure, was it? Was that Doug McClure? Was that the...
Exactly. Doug McClure was indeed in there as well. There are so many sort of things we could actually sort of go and share, and we'll continue to do so, because that's the important thing, because let's face it, Shane, we've been working together now since the 1980s, before Jess and Christian were actually born on the planet Earth.
No wonder I've aged so
he does that to you, doesn't he? Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So, a little plug, of course, memorabilia at the Birmingham NEC beginning of June, and indeed you're in Norwich as well at the end of September. Lots of other things happening as well. Presumably shanerimmer.com is the best website to go to for further details of appearances and such like?
Yeah.
Excellent. I think I'll ask Jess to put the last two questions to you because she was working on this and I think she's going to go for it. And I know that you would you like to have your father name checked by Shane and Sheila Rimmer? Because that would be, I mean, because he could play the podcast to him and then that's going to be brownie points personified. That could get you a new car.
Yeah, it could get me a new car.
That's exactly. So, you know, I should ask them to give a dedication to your dad, perhaps.
Yeah, could you give a dedication to my dad, who's called Craig, please, who's a massive fan of most of the things that you've done.
What's his name?
Craig.
Craig?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, what's coming up? Whatever's coming up, that's dedicated to Craig.
In fact, I'm going to actually sort of take it a step further because Shane started in radio. It's a skill he's never lost. It's all there. And the tune that is coming up is the theme to The Spy Who Loved Me. It's Carly Simon and Nobody Does It Better. Okay,
yeah.
So you see where we're going on that one. Yeah,
that's a lovely combination.
Meanwhile, have you both had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today?
Yeah.
Lovely.
Marvellous. Oh, you see Shane channeling his inner Cockney there. You know, lovely. It was great. And can we look forward to connecting with you again in the very near future?
Yeah.
Yes.
Hey. Right, we've planned this out there. We've had the rehearsal. Shane, would you like to dedicate this to your dad, whose name, of course, is?
Craig.
Craig. Shane, over to you.
Craig,
please.
Yes. I hope you're on the other end of this thing and you can hear it, but it's dedicated just to you.
Good as you. from running.
Audiobooks add another layer to the ability to lose yourself in a story well painted, and Audible's library of narrated novels is second to none. In fact, one of their latest offerings, Scarlet City, is a project of unenviable proportions. Based on Rebecca Gable's medieval trilogy, Scarlet City is a rags-to-riches tale following Jonah Durham's journey from humble apprentice to one of Europe's most powerful merchant traders, starring Douglas Booth, Miriam Margolyes, and Alison Steadman amidst a cast of more than 50 performers playing 123 roles. Scarlet City is one of the largest audio drama productions ever committed to tape. In the studio to discuss the new release and the production is the narrator of Scarlet City and TV and film star Douglas Booth. Thanks for joining us, Douglas.
My pleasure.
So do you want to tell us a bit more about this new production, Scarlet City, its characters and the story surrounding it?
So I think one of the most interesting things to note is that it's one of the biggest audio productions ever staged. There was over 50 actors. So for me, that was a really enjoyable experience to come into a studio and work with a huge array of actors, some of them who I'd worked before and some that I got to meet. So that was really enjoyable. And it's a truly epic story. Yeah. It follows my character, Jonah Durham, from a young, inexperienced apprentice as he works his way up to become one of the most powerful merchant traders in medieval Britain. And this journey takes him through the very colourful and dark and seductive streets of London and into Europe during the Hundred Years' War. And it sort of delves into how England's wool trade actually very much influenced the Hundred Years' War. And I found that very interesting. So I learned a lot about history, but also had a lot of fun reading it because it's quite juicy and there's a lot of villainous characters and... Yeah, it was a really enjoyable one.
Something that his teeth stuck into.
Yeah, exactly.
Like a lot of character development, that kind of thing. Yeah.
I said stop that! No one who has been disarmed is to be killed on board my ship.
But, sir, they're Frenchmen.
It'd still be murder, Sergeant.
Very well, then. Take them prisoner and bind them. Hurry. There are more enemy ships waiting for us out there.
Right. Now take off his helmet.
Would you look at that sweaty blonde head? A beardless boy he is. Looks a mite nervous to me.
Leave him be. What is your name?
Justin de Beauchamp. My father is the Vicomte de Lorne.
Oh, is that so? Then I'm certain he'll be prepared to pay all kinds of money to get you back alive, won't he? Amo! It looks like the captured enemy ships are being gathered behind ours. Have the galley brought back there and guarded. Everyone else is going back on board the Philippa.
Now, a lot of people listening might not know how an audiobook's done. Is this something you'd done before?
I had done a couple of audiobooks or radio plays. I did Northanger Abbey for Audible, which Emma Thompson narrated, which was really good fun. But that was a Jane Austen, obviously. So it was a very, very different thing. And I did my first ever radio job. Interesting was I played a young Winston Churchill, which Dirk Maggs directed for Radio 4. Which was great because he's always been a hero of mine, Winston Churchill, and I never thought I'd ever be able to play him. I managed to play him, and it was great fun.
I imagine a lot of people have this image, you say 50 actors playing 123 roles in Scarlet City. I imagine people have this image of one of these, you know, like table reads. You know, there's just 50 of you surrounding the table, everyone going in at once and getting lost. And it really like?
That would be a nightmare. I mean, what we did, we kind of took it scene by scene. It's so long, this story. It was over 1,500 pages to record. But we were in a room, in a recording studio, and there was just a very tight schedule where we'd have social communal area where actors would sort of hang out, and then they would just be drafted in for the scenes, then drafted out again. And
it was basically
sort of
green room, yeah.
Yeah, and it kind of it was a very sort of fluid thing in a sense. So, but one day I realised I was stood up for 8 hours straight and I only had about 20 minutes to rest my legs. So it was actually quite tiring.
What's the preparation like? It must be very different to being on camera and spending days on sets.
To be honest, it's time. I'd literally got back from filming a movie in Italy, you know, which is about 110 pages long, and I'd spent 3 months working on it. So to come and do something in a matter of weeks, mm-hmm. 1,500 yeah. pages, it didn't leave you with a huge amount of time, which is fun in a way. It means that you're front-footed and everything's kinetic and you've just got to get on with it, and interesting work comes from that in a way.
Do you listen to many audiobooks or anything like that yourself?
Growing up, I always listened to a lot because I'm quite severely dyslexic and it takes me a long time mm-hmm. to read a book. Yeah, I've literally been reading this book here I've got with me for 2 hours, and I've read about 30 pages today. It takes me a long time, so audiobooks are a godsend for me. And mm-hmm. I remember growing up, Just William was the Martin Jarvis reading. Just William was a sound of my childhood, as was I used to read the Harry Potters, and then I'd be so excited when Stephen Fry would then come read them. I could listen to them all over. I could listen to them. I just love the way he narrated that. And yeah, they're great. And with Audible's producing so much great quality audio drama now. Taxi drivers are always telling me how often they listen to audiobooks. I don't know why taxi drivers, maybe they're driving so much. But
I think it's people that commute a lot as well.
Yeah, because people that commute, transport, and it actually turns a sort of dull, dreary, wet morning into, you know, you can travel anywhere on the planet if you've got someone telling you a story like that. So it's kind of nice.
Exactly, I think that's a beautiful way of putting it.
It's quite transportative. Transportative.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I think you mentioned that for people, a lot of people might not think that being dyslexic, like you say, might put you off from reading a little bit, but you still get that sort of character depth. In fact, probably get a bit more character depth out of somebody reading those words to you. Is that something you think about when you came to do Scarlet City, for instance?
Yeah, I think it really transports you to a world. I think the production value on Scarlet City was very high. I was talking to the director of Loving Vincent, a movie I have mm-hmm. out right now about Vincent van Gogh and the lifestyle. And he said that he listens to about 3 audiobooks a month all the time. And he said that he'd listened to this one and he'd said that actually he thought it had really high production values and you really could get lost in the streets of London and the sounds and all the smells.
Yeah.
But it makes a difference having so many actors reading the parts, because it really becomes three-dimensional and real, and you kind of invest in each character's journey a little more when you have an actor playing a specific part, I think.
Yeah, you just sort of, you can take that little extra bit more out of it, can't you? So just to move away from that slightly then, where might we be seeing you next?
So I'm about to fly to New Orleans in the next 2 days, where I'm starting a movie about the Motley Crue. There was a book called The Dirt, which was written about their antics, and it's very exciting. There's some really talented actors in it, and I'm learning to play bass guitar. And
dedication.
we're going to be filming in New Orleans. So, and the rehearsal period runs over Mardi Gras, which is I'm very excited about, because lots of friends who've been to New Orleans say it's their favorite city in America. So I'm very excited to do that. But that's going to be my next adventure, and that'll take me to the US until May.
Well, 4 young actors being in New Orleans playing Motley Crue. I'm sure nothing will go wrong.
Oh, God, yeah.
Douglas Booth, thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you
so
much.
Scarlet City will be out with Audible soon.
And thanks to Stuart Buchanan for a little feature there with actor Douglas Booth. Oh, Booth, indeed. Okay, moving on to this thing, which has, I think it's fair to say, caused a number of issues. Not really issues, or discussed surprises, I think, Jess, in terms of Britain's top 20 first dance songs. Certainly Elvis Presley being number one, Can't Help Falling in Love. Quite interesting there. So let's put some flesh on the bone, shall we say, of our previous discussions by talking to the co-founder of Project Love. That would be the amazing Vicky Pavitt. How are you, Vicky?
I'm well, how are you?
Excellent, delighted to connect with you this morning. Vicky, talk to us about how this compilation list was put together, and obviously that whole notion of pressure, because clearly, you know, that, there is that thing happening in Windsor on Saturday morning, which is clashing with the FA Cup final and so on, which people will be sort of relating to. But talk to us about this particular survey that's been released today.
Yep, so we found that 2/3 of people think that couples that listen to music together are more likely to stay together. And it's no surprise, really, because listening to music boosts the love hormone, oxytocin, and that's linked to a sense of empathy and trust between people. So it really strengthens relationships.
Okay, let's test that out. Jess, your perspective in terms of the relationship, so is it, you listen to music together? It's a case of no, no, no. I'm more heavy metal, he's more Kylie Minogue. What's the thought of the line?
Well, we both have quite different music tastes, but I've just read that you said that 36 people admitted to pretending to like a song because their partner loves it.
And could be a recipe for disaster, hasn't it, really?
That's actually what my boyfriend did. He actually pretended to know what my favourite song was so that I would be impressed and like him more. And now he does actually like the song because I've made him like it. But, yeah, I feel like, yeah, it does bring us closer together when we listen to music together. Definitely.
Vicky, I mean, that's something which, again, you'd echo, or would you say, well, you've got to be honest about this. And if somebody actually is a passionate Bruno Mars fan, they've got to say this. And if somebody else likes Etta James, they've got to say it as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Honesty is key, and the person will want to know the real you. And I think it's fine to have those guilty pleasures, you know, if you have that secret love of Bruno Mars. You know, be bold about that.
Let's turn to our other studio co-hosts this morning. Christian. Christian, does this float your boat? Is the case of, yeah, fine, there's clearly a connection from that sort of point of view.
Well, what with the couples listening to music? I mean, me and my boyfriend, we've got the same sort of taste in music, but he has this obsession with Kylie.
Obsession?
A ridiculous obsession. Like he has a cardboard life-size cut out of her in his room.
Yeah,
you know, each to their own. I don't mind Bruno Mars, to be honest.
Yeah.
But when we do listen to music together, whether it's to drown out the arguing or whatever, or you know, if we're just happy and wanting to listen to it, fair enough. But yeah, we'll listen to whichever else we both want to listen to. And
Vicky, does that chime with your research in terms of this study and survey?
Could you just repeat that? What you said.
Is it the life-size cutout of Kylie Minogue that shocked you?
I was wondering whether to come on.
No, I know. Yeah. Me too. Me too, Vicky. I have to say, I wondered where were we going on that one.
I mean, whether he wants that to be set out over the radio, I don't know. It depends when I next see him. But yeah, I don't really have anyone that I like to listen to that much as he does. But I mean, obviously, when he puts it on, I'll listen to it. So it's
clearly the next survey that needs to be done, Vicky, is how do people relate to musical life-size cutouts of their heroes? You know, you've got Elvis Presley, Bryan Adams, the whole range of things, Eric Clapton and so on. Were there any surprises in terms of the study from your own point of view, which you thought, that was interesting? I mean, just in terms of the track, because they're all, I'd say, pretty traditional. I mean, Jess, you were saying you were surprised that ABBA was actually in there, Dancing Queen.
Yeah, I feel like if it was going to be an ABBA song, I wouldn't have expected Dancing Queen, I don't think. I feel like for a first dance song, I would have expected something a bit more lovey-dovey than Dancing Queen, to be honest.
Mm. Obviously, the king's still there, Elvis Presley, with Can't Help Falling in Love, as you said, from that point of view. And Vicky, were there any of your favourites which you thought, that should have? How could that not be actually in there?
Well, my first dance wedding song was Sister Sledge, Thinking of You, and I was very surprised that that wasn't in there. It's a classic disco love song. I was surprised, actually, about Elvis being the number one.
Mm. On the basis that, effectively, how long is he going to last? I mean, we're into the 21st century now. He died in 1977, for Lord's sakes.
Still going strong.
Exactly. I'm surprised you didn't go for We Are Family from Sister Sledge. I thought you might have, but obviously not. Perhaps, no.
Yeah.
That's okay. If people are interested in finding out further details about, well, actually, talk to us a bit about Project Love, because I talked about that. It's wonderful. Share with us what exactly, as co-founder of Project Love, it's all about.
Yeah, so Project Love is a platform for women that inspires and empowers them to create lives and relationships that they love. And we started out just looking at dating and finding love, and now it's expanded into making positive lifestyle changes and changing career.
Sounds good. Jesse, any other questions or thoughts?
I'm trying to read through all the information that's
there's
on the
so
sheet of paper. There's so much
information. There's so much there. It's wonderful. And I mean, in terms of the sort of addressing the sort of the key things, you've talked about oxytocin and so on. Are you finding that as music becomes ever more ubiquitous and around in all sorts of places, Vicky, that actually people are changing? And maybe that it's because it's relatively easy to download stuff as and when you want. That's one of the reasons why we still keep coming back to the old classics, the Frank Sinatras, the Al Greens, the Benny Kings and so on.
Yeah, music really connects people in a way that can be transformative.
It's an incredibly, you know, in an incredibly positive way. And, you know, we've been listening to music since the dawn of time, but now we have more ways to listen to music than ever.
And will hopefully continue to do so, or indeed make music. I mean, Vicky, do you have any musical tendencies yourself, which you sort of think, yes, I wish there was some more stuff for Triangle we could actually adapt here?
Sorry, what was that?
Do you play any instruments yourself?
Oh, instruments. I don't play any instruments, actually, no.
I'm still thinking of couples playing together, listening to music together, doing a whole range of things there. Maybe I'm just fantasising. What the heck? Vicky, how can people actually find out further information about this survey? We've just literally skimmed the surface, and indeed Project Love. What's the best place to go to?
Yeah, so head to sonos.com for more information, and you'll also find a first dance wedding playlist over there as well. And head to loveprojectlove.com for more info on Project Love.
And the final task for your good self, it's you're going to wear the musical producer hat for the next moment, Vicky. And the two tracks that we can actually offer you are Creature Comfort and Arcade Fire, or Sister Sledge and Thinking of You.
Ooh, Sister Sledge.
Do you know, I had a feeling you might go there. So in a few moments, we'll hopefully be speaking to Unite Students' City Manager, Sarah Reynolds, talking about the notion that parents think their 16 to 19-year-olds can't cook, can't wash their bed sheets, can't use a vacuum cleaner, and indeed have lots of other lacunae in their lives. Does that resonate with yourself, Jessie?
Well, I think my mum kind of set me up quite well for uni. I think I kind of knew the basics. I knew how to kind of look after myself and knew how to do washing and stuff like that. But I feel like 16 to 19-year-olds know more than you think they do. I feel like they can just pick things up as and when they need to, okay. To be honest. I feel like the hardest thing to learn how to do is washing, definitely.
So the notion that 3/4 of parents are expecting a raid on the bank of mum and dad in the first term for first years.
I didn't borrow any money off my mum or dad.
There we are. Teenagers on a different wavelength believe they're ready for university life. Again, according to this report, if parents are from Venus, then teenagers are most definitely from Mars. While 16 to 19-year-olds are giving themselves an A star for their life skills, sceptical parents are grading them a measly C. What about yourself, Christian? Because, I mean, you're relative. I mean, you can cast the mind back to when you're sort of making that transition. In this case, did you feel prepared? You say, yeah, I'm sorted.
Yeah, I'd say we're quite prepared. For university, anyway, like, I could cook, more or less. Like, I can make an all right meal. Washing, like, do that. I borrowed a bit of money off my mum when I started, but other than that, I think she set me up quite well for being independent, you know, sort of living on your own.
Well, we will wrap up the programme, as I say, with a consideration from our expert in this particular field. If you're checking times, it's 9:45. And also a little flag up that this evening we'll be listening to Inspired on Air again, which featured a whole range of things we were doing with a school in Stamford yesterday. So that's with Michael Blackburn, amongst others, as far as Siren Radio is concerned. Lots of other great stuff happening on Siren Radio, Lincoln's first community radio station. Time for the Goo Goo Dolls.
And I don't want the world to see me, 'cause I don't think that they'd understand. When everything's made to be broken, I just want you to know who I am. And I don't want the world to see me, 'cause I don't think that they'd understand. When everything's made to be broken, I just
indeed. Now, I think it's fair to say that, Jesse, you were well prepared for university from what you said earlier when we were talking about this this survey, and Christian, sort of well prepared, but not necessarily 100% prepared. I mean, if you were asked to grade yourself, would you have said you were A star for university, all set? Or
I would have said about an A, probably.
About an A. And
maybe
Christian...
A.
I mean, I'd say I burnt a fair bit in the first bit, but that's just because of my cooking, really. I'm not
all right. Right. Yeah. Okay, so well done. Well sorted. Okay, let's address this whole survey now with Unite Student City Manager. That's the amazingly wonderful Sarah Reynolds. Good morning, Sarah. How are you?
Good morning. I'm fine, thank you. How are you?
Excellent. Now, Unite, obviously, over 3,500 beds providing a home to students every year, and it's pretty much you've seen it all when it comes to making that leap to university and being prepared for university as far as this is concerned. We have two fine undergraduates in the studio, one level two, one level one. We're going into level three and level two. We've talked about their experiences. Were you surprised by this report, or did you think, yeah, typical students, what's going on?
No, absolutely. I think all of the findings in the report is absolutely, you know, what we found living the, you know, on day to day when we have check-ins with students. It's absolutely some of the experiences that we find. You know, it's really daunting going to university for both parents and students. So all of the facts that we found on there is absolutely everything that we find every day.
Now, drilling down into the data, we also find that surveys suggest that 39% of parents don't think their teenagers can wash clothes. 50% don't think that they can iron them. Let's just test that in the studio. Are you a clothes washer or an ironer?
Yes.
He's scoring very highly on this one. Christian?
Yeah, I can wash clothes and iron when I can be bothered. Yeah.
Obviously, better class of student at the University of Lincoln. Clearly, it's coming across here. 20% of parents don't think that their sons or daughters can do basic cleaning, and 21% don't think they can use a vacuum cleaner, whereas actually 95% and 98% of teenagers feel confident about doing basic cleaning and using a vacuum cleaner. And of course, the classic, which is presumably from the point of view of your own involvement, Sarah, 18% don't even think that their children can make their bed, whereas 97% of people think that they can make the bed. I mean, is that as difficult as it used to be? Surely you just throw the duvet on in a different way these days.
I think what it is, I think at the moment, I think parents and students and, you know, teenagers appear to be on different wavelengths. And you know, for us, it's about having those conversations, and it's about making sure that, you know, students are getting prepared for university life. You know, sitting down, talking to their parents, you know, about some of the things that they're going to be experiencing. And I think from our point of view, it's making sure that, you know, that the parents understand that, look, you know, the kids can do this. You know, that you don't have to worry about them. They're going to be absolutely fine.
Okay, so let's cast the hours back to when you made the decision to actually come to Lincoln, all the way from Hull, faraway place, strange-sounding names, etc. And Jesse, does what Sarah's been saying, does it kind of resonate with yourself in terms of are you prepared for university life and so on?
I feel like I was quite prepared for university life, but I think a lot of the people in my flat were a lot less prepared than I was, and I found that it's usually just lads who aren't quite as prepared. Like,
without mentioning any names, because obviously that'd be wrong, would you like to give some examples to Sarah and see whether she'd say, oh, yes, yeah, I agree?
It was just, like, not washing up after themselves, wearing clothes that were dirty and not washing them because they couldn't be bothered, and, like, never changing their bedding, never cleaning their bathroom or anything like that. It was just kind of things that I think are just common sense to do every now and again. They just didn't think to do at all.
Sarah, is this kind of chiming with yourself?
really. You know, we see it all the time. And, you know, part of our role at United Students is to kind of, you know, support students where perhaps some of their flatmates might not be doing some of the chores, if you like, and, you know, explaining sort of like the importance of living with other people and, you know, also ensuring that, you know, they kind of work together. You know, nobody wants, you know, a dirty, messy kitchen. So, you know, let's just sort it out and just clean up after yourself.
Yeah, I mean, there are only so many times you grow penicillin before it actually becomes, you know, soup of stuff. Christian, from the Mail, are you going to sort of say that's ridiculous as a male? I sort of find that, you know, I always sort of change various other bits and pieces. Or again, is there a sort of similarity there? Have you had any experiences in terms of either, you know, no need to any names, but sort of areas where you think, ooh, wasn't sure about that?
Oh, no, males are grim. I agree with that. Yeah, like, no, I'd... Like, for instance, I mean, just simply ironing clothes and stuff like that, I'd never really bother. I'd try and make sure that they're just not creased when I do wear them. But I realised, especially in the first few weeks, first month, something like that, people who would come to university that never really, for instance, like, drunk or anything like that, when they come here, they go all out because they had all this independence and everything like that, and then they could never quite... They'd be complete messes and stuff like that, and they wouldn't be able to handle themselves without having that kind of like, you know, if you get too drunk or whatever, you can, your mum will come down and pick you up or something like that. The independence, I think, was too much for them in certain respects.
Too much independence, Sarah. Is that, again, because looking at the numbers that have never been spoken to about alcohol again, we're looking at fairly high numbers there, about sort of 58% and so on in terms of the survey.
I think, you know, the whole experience of going to university can be quite daunting. And sometimes, you know, it's, you know, students have a perception of, you know, what it's going to be like. And actually, when, you know, that's happening, you know, for real, it can be, you know, quite a lot, and it can be quite overwhelming. You know, Unite Students, we kind of, you know, want to make sure that, you know, by preparing students and having some of these perhaps difficult conversations about saying that, you know, be careful when you're doing, you know, drinks with your parents, or, you know, talking about some of these things to make sure that students are prepared, it really does help. But, yeah, we do see that. And, you know, I think just through a bit of planning and, you know, having, you know, these conversations, it really can prepare people. And, you know, they get through it. You know, after the first couple of weeks of experience in some of these, you know, students are settled in, you know, they've made some of their friends, you know, and it really does help them.
Sarah, where can people go to for further information to find out about your own work with Unite and indeed the survey?
If they want to log on to the Unite students website, all the details that they need to read the survey further will be on there. And yeah, everything's on there that they need to know.
Brilliant. Sarah Reynolds, Unite Student City Manager. We salute you. Take care now.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Time to even listen to the Tears for Fears as the programme comes to a nice conclusion this morning. Thanks to Dr. Christopher Dowes, thanks to Stephanie Romaszewski, Ian Lennox, Shane and Sheila Rimmer, Douglas Booth, Stuart Buchanan, Isabella Goldie, Roxy Naoshi, and Sarah Reynolds, of course, for guiding us through the programme. Have you enjoyed your first experience of Siren Radio and the Midweek Drive Morning Edition, Christian Arkupovich?
I have, yeah. I definitely have. I hope I can come back.
Well, I mean, it's all really down to Jessie. I mean, she has the final say on these kind of things. She's chilling, yeah, fine. Jessie, is it a yes from you?
It is indeed a yes from
Whoa,
me.
Whoa, really, there we are. You. Hull and Wakefield working together for the benefit of mankind. Amazing. Jessie, you're also actually your first morning show.
Yep.
And you've got the sleep advice now, so all's well. Hopefully more of that.
Hopefully.
Drive safely to London.
Thank you.
The operative word being drive and keep going in the car. So all will be well as far as that's concerned. Yeah. And we'll see you next week, no doubt.
Yep. Definitely.
Excellent. Okay. Thank you, dear listener, for being part of the Siren Radio Midweek Drive Morning Edition, or whatever part you've actually chosen to be in. Even if you have got a cardboard cutout Kylie Minogue, no names, just put it there. Extraordinary. What is it? I would have thought cardboard Scott Tracy. Still. That's it. We all say farewell now. Can we say happy trails? A one, two, three.
Happy trails.
FM. Online. Mobile.